where Stamford comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. Good morning, good morning. Joining us now to talk about the crisis that we all know intuitively and intellectually has we have been seeing with respect to our teenagers, and the state of Connecticut has sat up and paid attention. Joining us now is Angie Annette, supervisor of the Adolescent and Child Health Unit at the Connecticut Department of Public Health, to talk about a final report of a school-based health center working group. And this is a very big contribution to information that hopefully our decision makers will hear and filter through a lens of being able to find some solutions. Angie Annette, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today, and good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure.
I'm looking forward to sharing this information on children, adolescents, and mental health in Connecticut. Would you like me to just get started, or do you have a series of questions for me?
Well, I would like to know, first of all, how do you define your job? What is your role within Connecticut? What do you do?
As a supervisor of the Adolescent and Child Health Unit, I have responsibilities for our Children and Youth with Special Healthcare Needs program. I'm actually part of a federal program, and I'm the a director for Children and Youth with Special Healthcare Needs. I'm also the person who is the supervisor for the school-based health centers, which is more of what today's discussion is going to be for.
Yes.
And our unit also does the early hearing detection intervention. So we do all hearing screenings for kids in the state. So lots of different things going on with the Department of Public Health, and that's a snippet of what happens in the child and adolescent unit.
All right. So let's talk about, we know that coming out of 2 years of COVID, the statistics are awful pretty much everywhere you look, from delays in reading to more cries of self-harm to significant depression. A lot of people argue that the way we as grown-ups handled COVID backfired on our own children. Can you first of all tell us what you are seeing on the front lines of this? What are you seeing in the way of our children's health?
Absolutely. Well, Connecticut is experiencing pretty much what everybody around the country is experiencing. And let me start by saying that the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the Children's Hospital Association has declared a national state of emergency in children's mental health. And they are pleading with policymakers and advocates at all levels to improve the system that's out there. Our national Surgeon General, Surgeon General Murthy, has a youth mental health crisis information document that came out specifically in regards to COVID-19 pandemic. And that is what we were looking at in Connecticut as well. So before the pandemic, mental health challenges were the leading cause of disability and poor life outcomes in young people, with up to 1 in 5 children ages 3 to 17 in the U.S. having a mental, emotional, developmental, or behavioral disorder. In addition, from 2009 to 2019, the share of high school students who reported persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness increased by 40% to more than 1 in 3 children. So what the Surgeon General report says is what we see in Connecticut, that this pandemic has just added to these pre-existing conditions that America's youth has faced. And it disrupted the lives of children and adolescents, in-person schooling, in-person social opportunities, peers and mentors, access to health care, social services, food, housing, and health of the caregiver.
Okay. So
certainly documentation is there, supporting it. And Connecticut's had the same experience. So our legislators requested in this report that we take a look at how we might be able to have school-based health centers provide a support and solutions for that.
Okay, I want to do a little bit of a recap so we understand what families, what right now, if a child is in severe emotional mental distress, the parent will bring that, the school maybe sometimes will bring that to the attention of the parent, but either way, that will become a crisis issue. Some of the solutions historically have been that the children that are outplaced in therapeutic boarding schools, which take a child away from their family, cost an enormous amount of money, sometimes are very successful, but not always, right?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. And you're talking about like $100,000 a year per kid, right? Like big money.
Right. And you're talking about, Lisa, somebody who's already been identified and further along on the identification of needing special assistance.
Okay.
There's people who are clogging up the system on every part of the entry to it. CCMC and our children's-based hospitals are just overwhelmed with people showing up, people more at the beginning part of that process, right?
Okay.
Identifying the need, seeing what's going on. There just was an opinion written by Dr. Paul Dworkin. He was talking about emergency room access 14 years ago, and there was, you know, less than a dozen kids waiting. He said he would love that right now. CCMC and other hospitals are 2 and 3 times that amount waiting for people to have initial evaluation services. And
you know, they used to have a children's and adolescents mini hospital wing at St. Vincent's in Westport, but it was closed a few years ago. I don't know why.
That is quite possible. I do not know. I don't know the specifics. We really only have,
the building is still there, Anne, by the way. Anne, you should know this. The building is still there.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, it's underutilized. It's still on the campus.
It could have been like a business decision made for, you know, some reason. But we definitely need to expand services. And the legislators are working hard to try to pull together a number of different data points along with a number of different interventions so that we can serve everyone along this spectrum who need mental health. The report that specifically I'm speaking of is Public Act 2135. Section 16 was a request to look at existing school-based health centers, where we could put new ones, where we could expand them, and to talk specifically about telehealth and insurance reimbursement. So just to give a quick snippet, a school-based health center is a standalone clinic. It can include a primary care site at a school, within a school, providing all the services that you would need if you went to your PCP, your primary care provider. And there's also a behavioral health piece that provides a full array of services, both screening kids, providing a plan if there's a need identified, follow up within the school, and then if there needs to be follow up outside the school, which is more of the cases that I think you were talking about at the beginning, that happens as well too. So this report is to try to say, where we have these licensed outpatient hospital-based clinics within a school, what can we do to increase that number? Because kids are in school, right? This past year they've been in school, and that is where they can reach trusted caregivers and get a full array of health services. This hopefully gets some increased attendance rates too, and also helps reduce emergency room visits, because we're hoping that we're stopping, and we have the data to show we're stopping the kids who need that coordination service within the school setting. Then there's other kids who need more intensive school.
So we're a long way from the old-fashioned school nurse, in other words. We're a long way from that.
Very different than a school-based health center, correct?
Right.
A school-based center is just like your PCP. So the people we have in school-based health centers are providing physical exams, routine checkups, immunization, diagnosis and treatment of acute illness. They can prescribe and dispense medications. I mean, education on health, nutrition counseling, a full array of services, just like if you went to your PCP.
And these are located in high schools? Anne, are these in high schools? Where are these?
Across the board, Lisa. We have them all the way down to preschool
No way.
Up through high school. Yes,
really?
We do, because health care is needed. You need to be healthy in order to learn, right? Like it's a, and if the majority of people have a health care need that can be met, and then they can be sent back to the classroom, and that's
sure.
what our data shows.
Yeah, and that's what's so encouraging. That's what I was reading. It shows right. that this model really works for kids. It keeps them in school and happier, right?
It does. It does. And parents aren't leaving work. You know, some parents may not be able to get a half a day off to bring their child down to see if they have, you know, the need for some health service, whatever that health service is. So this allows it to take place and children and adolescents go back to the classroom.
Do we have enough doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners to be able to staff all of these places?
Well, there are and there is a well-documented behavioral health lack of resources that is not unknown in Connecticut as well as in other states. We have a couple different funding models, and I don't know if it's worth it for me to get too far into this, but within the Department of Public Health, we fund 90 of these statewide. That report noted that. But there's other models for funding, too. Community health centers fund some of them themselves, and schools sometimes create their own, you know, blending of funding to be able to set one up.
We're chatting with Angie Annette, Supervisor of Adolescent and Child Health Unit at the Connecticut Department of Public Health. I want you to know, who are listening to me, that behavioral health is the term used within the medical community for mental health. It's a
yes.
bit of a euphemism. Most people don't know what you're talking about when you say behavioral health. It means mental health. Just want to let people
know. It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I tell you just a little bit about the report?
Sure. Sure. You got about 3 minutes. Go ahead. Let's hear it, Ann. Go ahead.
Okay, great. First of all, let me say that we are working to get it placed on the Department of Public Health website. I did the approval to get it on. I think it has to batch overnight, so it should be there in a day or two for anybody who wants to see it underneath school-based health centers. So we took a model from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Yeah.
And they provide a lot of data for how to look at areas of need. And one of this is called the Social Vulnerability Index. So they look at socioeconomic status, household composition and disability, minority status and language, and housing type and transportation, put it all together, mix up all those data points, there's like 16 of them, and come up with who needs something the most. We match that with health professional shortages, which we know, again, a federal data point that says, where aren't there enough doctors? Where aren't there enough mental health people? And we came up with a list. We have 157 schools that we name in this report that could use a school-based health center, because that is what the legislators asked us to do.
And in our... do you know, I mean, do you have that list handy? Because we're here in Fairfield County. I mean, do you have it at the
yeah.
ready? Are there some schools you want to tell us about?
Sure. On the 157, that would have been good for me to do a little pre-work on that, Lisa. Good point.
Sorry about that. Well, I'm looking at this. It says there is a little bit of a shorthand. It looks like Stanford could use 8 of them, right?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Stanford needs 8. Bridgeport needs 24. I don't know if you'd consider that in your general
Definitely.
Area.
Definitely. Oh, no, that's very much in our area. Yeah.
We tried to do this. West Haven needs 7. We took that social vulnerability index along with the health professional shortage, and we did weigh them a little bit. Because if we didn't weigh them a little bit, it would have been the top big 5. You know, towns in Connecticut, the big cities, that mm-hmm. would have gotten more of it. But we wanted to make sure, we heard from the work group members that there are smaller towns that have these same issues.
Yeah, Manchester, I see. You could use one in Manchester. Yep. Danbury could use 3. I'm looking at
right.
the list myself. West Hartford could use right. 4 of them. So that's obviously
right.
not all high schools. So these would be distributed among different schools in these communities. New Haven, 24. It's a lot.
Right.
It's a lot. But, you know, we would be saving incalculable human suffering and financial dollars if these work.
Absolutely. They do work. We have data right now to know they work.
Yeah.
We just have to, you know, somebody has to make the decision to figure out how to get these up and going. Yeah, the actual names of the schools are listed there, too. Like, we're just talking about kind of the summary points.
Okay.
But the schools are on this report as well. This is based upon that data piece and knowing that, you know, 157 is what we identified for school-based health centers. The second part of the, and that would be both for primary care and mental health. The second component they asked us about is where we might be able to expand existing.
And I'm going to have to stop you right there, Ann, because we've run out of time. Ann Giannette, sure. Supervisor of Adolescent and Child Health Unit. Thank you so much for joining us today and letting us know that there are alternatives and solutions being proposed to help our kids. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate your time. Yep.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Absolutely. We'll be right back.